the best part of all of this. If it wasn't for college, right? Yes, it's clear that this is your best strategy to get into college. Arrive at high level of self-awareness and then leverage that self-awareness to begin solving a problem and making an impact in your community around something that violates your core values. By far, that's the best way to stand out when you apply to college. And that's not just true of the top schools. It's also going to help you get scholarships at schools that are not as highly ranked. It's going to help you stand out in all of these universities. But like you said, the real reason we do this is for the human.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people who can help you on your parenting, leadership, or teaching journey. And today, we have a little bit of a different episode. We're talking about how to get into college. And please keep listening, because I tell you, when I met this man and at a conference, and I saw this was the topic, I was really curious and, to be honest, a little skeptical about what he was going to say, because everything that I've heard, every bit of advice I've heard about getting into college hasn't really sounded like it's aligned with, you know, emotionally healthy habits that we talk about here on this podcast. But I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised, and I think you will be too. But without further ado, without talking about it anymore, I'm going to let him introduce himself, and then we'll jump right into the conversation. Introduce yourself.
Thanks so much, Chaz. I'm Steve Gardner. I'm a Harvard graduate and founder of the Ivy League Challenge, which is an online course that equips teens and even preteens to really align with their core values, right? To figure out who they are and then make an impact in their community, because those are the things that actually help them stand out in these really, really competitive application pools for some of the top universities in the world, or certainly in the United States. And so, yeah, I remember the conference well where we met, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Okay. So everything that I've heard, so like it traditionally in how to get into college, it's work hard. You have to have a bunch of extracurriculars. You have to work so you can stand out as many extracurriculars as possible. GPA, you know, 4.100. And so is that the way that you get into these kind of Ivy League schools? You said you're a Harvard graduate. Like, tell us, how do we get into college? What is the way? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me reinforce or confirm what you've heard. That is the advice that is out there, right? If you talk to almost anyone about, you know, how do you get into a top tier school, they're going to give you virtually the same advice, which in just a minute, we'll realize together how absurd this is, that we're going to stand out by everyone following the same advice. Such irony there, that everyone do these four things and then you can stand out and you know, along with the other hundreds of thousands of people who are doing the exact same four things. So the advice that you're going to get is, number one, if you want to get into a top tier school, number one, take the most rigorous classes available at your high school and do very well in them. Number two, take and retake however many times you need to your SAT or ACT score test until you get a near perfect score. Number three, demonstrate leadership in as many ways as possible. And for those parents who are listening in who have older siblings or have children who are older than you know, kind of your demographic, or have just seen friends and kids of friends who have gone through college applications and high school itself, they know what I'm talking about with this demonstrate leadership in as many ways as possible. Our teens are encouraged to do, you know, multiple sports and music and debate and National Honor Society and sign up for a half dozen clubs and then volunteer at the hospital or the homeless shelter or the whatever. And I mean, my goodness, that's a full-time job without school. So demonstrate leadership in as many ways as possible. Bonus points if it's like multiple different categories, so you show you're well-rounded, et cetera. And then the fourth piece of advice that people give is create some kind of wow factor, some kind of standout factor or X factor. If you're familiar with this industry, you might be familiar with the word spike. Develop a spike instead of being well-rounded. The idea is you're lopsided, right? You've got a spike in one area where you go really deep into something, and that spike is what helps you stand out. Anyway, that's the advice that everyone gets. And as we alluded to earlier, it's going to be really difficult to stand out if you do the same thing that everyone else does. And your strategy for standing out is to just do it better than everyone else.
Okay, so then what do you do instead? Because that's the advice that I got to, and it, people are still getting that advice. And I'm sure there are parents listening right now who are encouraging their children to do it right now. So what do do instead?
So it's not that it's just blatantly false. In fact, your grades are perhaps the most important part of all of this. And it's not like high levels of emotional intelligence and self-awareness and thoughtfulness, which we'll talk about soon, which is like the key to standing out, or high level impacts in your community, right? Leading a cause, or I mean, truly, there's nothing more compelling in this world than a hero on a mission. And if a teenager figures out who they are and they lead a cause to solve a problem, they become that hero on a mission. That's a compelling story. Yeah. But and I imagine we've got plenty of time to talk about that and we'll get there. But before we get there, I think it's important to realize it's not just a kernel of truth in that advice. It's just that taken whole without context makes it bad advice. Mm-hmm. And so you do have to get good grades, but you don't have to get, you don't have to have perfect grades in all of the most rigorous classes that are available at your school, which some students try to do. Many students who listen to that advice, they hear, take the most rigorous classes and get great grades. Okay, so I'll take all the most rigorous classes, regardless of my values, regardless of my strengths and my interests and the impact that I want to have in the world. So, you know, I would take these classes that I'm interested in or that prepare me to make my impact and lead my cause, but those aren't the most rigorous. So I'll take these instead. That would be a terrible strategy. That would be a strategy that actually excludes you, even if you're getting outstanding grades. You're going to confuse the admissions officer. They're going to look at that application and say, well, why are they taking these, you know, all these classes? I don't get who this person is. I don't see how they fit in on our campus. And one of the misconceptions that a lot of people have is that admissions officers are looking for the smartest people or the most qualified people, that's the thing that's going to, that, you know, once they find the smartest person, that's who they're letting in. And that nothing could be further from the truth, right? Think about, there are 37,000 high schools in North America. Hmm. And that means, and some of these schools have more than one valedictorian. Some have like 10 or more. And so we're talking, you know, 40,000 or so valedictorians applying to all these top schools. There aren't 40,000 spots in the top, you know, 20 colleges in America. There aren't that many spots, period. And Drew Faust, the dean of admissions at Harvard College up until I think it was 2018, but she was the previous dean of admissions. She said, you know, we could fill our class twice over with leftovers with just valedictorians. And we only admit a fraction of them, right? Because they're not looking for the smartest person. And if you're a college, if you're an admissions officer, put yourself in their shoes for just a second, right? How, How do you decide which valedictorian is smarter or more qualified, right? How do you decide who's more qualified when you have equally impressive resumes? And so the point is that they don't, and they don't even pretend to. So it's not the admissions officers who are perpetuating these myths. They're not pretending to try to find the most qualified people. They'll tell you clearly if you get an opportunity, as I have, to speak with them. I've spoken for a couple hundred hours with admissions officers at many of these top schools, and they're not pretending to try to find the most qualified people. They're trying to create a rich, diverse class of very, very different students from very different backgrounds, mm-hmm. with different interests and different values that can come together and create an ecosystem that mm-hmm. supports mm-hmm. itself. Mm. Right. The last thing they want is 2,000 clones of the same person.
Makes a lot right? of sense. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not what they want. They want rich, diverse backgrounds. So if you present yourself as the person who takes the most rigorous classes, regardless of your interest level or how you what you bring to the world as a result of taking that class, right? Instead of thinking, oh, I need to take the top classes so I can be impressive. We should be thinking, which classes should I take so that I can further my mission, so that I can further my, you know, my personal objectives, right? How do I help my community, and what impact can I make as a result of understanding these things? And so I'll take those classes. And yes, there has to be some balance because schools have prerequisites and you have to take 4 years of English and 4 years of math and 4 years of science, regardless of if that aligns with your interests or not. You do have to, as a teenager, it's nice to study a lot of different things so that you might discover that you are interested in something that you never imagined you would be interested in. You may discover that that's really valuable to you. And understanding physics and chemistry and biology will open your eyes to, you know, how things that you are interested in. If you're interested in history or psychology or something like that, knowing how the mechanics of the world in physics and how the laws of physics operate isn't going to hurt you as you study history and humanities and whatever else.
So
there are some requirements, and you do need to understand and meet those requirements that lead to a more enriched, you know, overall human being. The difference is, instead of just choosing all your classes based on what's most rigorous, you take classes based on you and how you bring out the best in you when you have a choice.
So my question is, as a parent or as a teacher of a child who's kind of going through this, you know, whether they're younger or they're teens or, you know, wherever they're at, how do we support children in helping them find out what their mission is, what their interests are, what their passion is? Like, how do we, you know, play that supporting role in that for children? Because I know there are a lot of parents who may feel like, you know, their child isn't interested in everything, or they're interested in everything, but they're just, mm-hmm. they go to different things, but there's no real big interest. How do we support children in helping them find their thing?
Yeah, such a great question. And it's such a key, right? It's such an important part of this entire process. And it just so happens that for most parents, teachers, college counselors, mentors of teens, that's the hardest part. Because most adults haven't done this kind of introspection. Mm-hmm. Most adults haven't done the deep thinking to figure out who they are at their core, mm. right? And if I haven't done that work for myself, it's difficult for me to guide someone else through it. Mm. So it is challenging. And so some of the things you want to think about in my course in the Ivy League Challenge, we kind of go through three phases. I'll just briefly explain this because if you can duplicate my role for your child, then you'll want to take them through these phases in order. You don't want to get them out of order. Phase one is self-awareness. And that's where the child identifies their core values, their interests, their strengths, and kind of figures out their personal theme, right? Who they are and what they look like when they're being their best self. Phase two is their impact project. And I introduce to my students, I introduce 9 different types of impact that are very impressive to admissions officers, that demonstrate leadership, that show problem-solving skills, that show metacognition and thoughtfulness, emotional intelligence, et cetera, right? And so the transition between self-awareness, phase one, and your impact project, phase two, is a skill that you, I highly encourage you as a parent to help your child develop. And that is investigative journalism. Okay, how do you help your child learn to ask better questions and be better discerning of the answers that they find? How do they figure out, you know, higher quality answers? And this is a really amazing opportunity for you as a parent to challenge your own biases, right? What biases do you have that limit your access to good information? Okay, so if you are political, there are all kinds of studies that show that if we first kind of prime your mind by talking about a politically hot topic, a topic that is, you know, either Democrat or Republican, we prime your mind, first of all, with gun control or abortion or something like that, we absolutely almost eliminate your ability to learn new things for the next, you know, period of time. Your mind will be so cut off.
Yeah.
A set period of time that the discussions to follow a primed mind are totally wasted. Yeah. Now, that happens in adults more than younger kids and in teenagers. And so you as an adult leading this charge, your challenge is to say, you know, what are the things that absolutely cut me off from learning and growth and development? What are the things that I'm sure I'm right about and everyone else must be wrong about? Mm-hmm. Because if you can model for your child how difficult it is for you to overcome your bias, but how willing you are to look at other information and other sides and whatever else, and just try to, you're not trying to convince anyone that you're right or that they're right, or that they're wrong or that you're wrong. You're not even trying to convince yourself that you're wrong. All you're trying to do is arrive at a level of understanding. Mm. Get to the point where you're no longer saying, I know I'm right, and everyone that does not agree with me is just ignorant. Or you study and study and you realize, oh, they're not ignorant. Okay, then they must have some kind of ulterior motive. That's where the conspiracy theories are coming from, right? They must want people to think this, so they're teaching it nefariously, right? They've got malice in mind. And so, you know, if you can get beyond everyone who disagrees with me on this one important thing is either ignorant or evil, right? They have some kind of evil plan. They know that they're wrong, but they're pretending to be right anyway because they have some kind of ulterior motive. If you can get past that for yourself, whether it's, I mean, regardless of what your hot topic is, and I've listed some really, really hot topics. I mean, gun control and abortion in the United States are really emotionally charged subjects, right? And for you, it might be something different, but those are great examples. If you can get to the point where you say, I still think I'm right, but I can see where you're coming from. I disagree where you're coming from, but I get it, right? If you can just model that for your child, that's amazing. That is a level of self-awareness that can help set them up for success. Then there's a couple of other things that you can do. Obviously, you know, when I set them with their peers, we don't talk about politically hot topics and then try to get them to understand each other. We go straight for the core values. I'm just saying, for adults, this is very difficult work. Yeah. Because understanding what you are at your core means you have to kind of get past, you know, we have the beliefs about ourselves. I'm this person who's selfish and has selfish desires, and I don't want everyone to see the real me. And so when I'm interacting with public, I put on a facade, I put on a mask, and I pretend to be someone that's better than the is, or almost everyone in the world is doing this, right? We don't want people to see our real selves. Mm-hmm. So we create a facade that we are willing to let people see, but we're afraid to really get into the real self, right? because I don't even want to admit that that's who I actually am. And what
the big thing that I heard you kind of say in terms of like as an adult of what to really model for children is to step into curiosity and to really model curiosity instead of, you know, instead of immediately judging. And this is something that we talk about all the time here, and to step into curiosity from that place, we can be open to question things, question our own beliefs. And kind of what I'm hearing, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is modeling that curiosity and that ability to be open and ask questions will maybe open up the world a little bit for children, because they will be able to have a greater ability or capacity to be curious and ask questions to kind of figure out more about, you know, themselves and what their mission is and where they want to go. Am I kind of on target here?
Yeah. Very, very good. Curiosity is brilliant. And then to turn that curiosity and shine that light inwardly is the scariest thing to be curious about.
Yeah.
But I want to give your listeners just some hope there, because we're really scared to look at ourselves as we think we are, because we don't know that there's the real self is underneath that facade. The person, the selfish and the you know, evil person that we think we are, that we need to hide from the rest of the world, is not us either. There's a layer that's deeper. And we created that selfish layer out of protection or out of, you know, whatever else, self-protection.
Ego.
Or
it's ego.
That's right. It's the ego. But beneath that are our core values. Yeah. And at our core, we're actually very selfless. We're very loving. We're very empathetic. We're very willing to, I mean, we want to help people and we want to connect and we want to be vulnerable. And all these things that are so, so important for healthy living. But it's scary to say, I'm going to look at the real me, because I have to go through that, what I think is the real me, to get to the real me. Mm-hmm. All right. And so the good news is, so that's, it's really hard for adults. And that's why, you know, coaching and there's all kinds of things that are really valuable for adults to kind of figure out who they are. Get a, you know, personal development coach or even therapy. It can be really helpful for all those things. But for teens and for younger kids, you know, what makes you angry is a great question. What in society, as you look around, when you learn about what's happening in the world, what just isn't right?
What just
makes you angry? And some kids don't get angry. They're like me. I things don't make me angry very often, but they do break my heart. So another version of the same question is, what breaks your heart? Right? What just makes you, that's just not right. It shouldn't be like that. And those questions help you identify the issues in the world that violate your core values. Another set of questions you can ask your child, things like, who do you admire? But don't stop at the surface question, what makes you angry, or what, you know, what breaks your heart, or who do you admire? Keep asking, keep being curious, right? Curiosity is a really good word to use here. Keep asking why. What is it about that breaks your heart? Why does it make you angry? Oh, why does that make you angry? What is it about that's so bad or so wrong? And then who do you admire and why? And really try to dive in and go as deep as you can about why they admire this person, because that's going to be a clue about what they desire for themselves. Other emotions, another reason why you don't want to be afraid to really understand yourself, even the parts that you think you don't like about yourself. What are you envious of? Envy is a powerful tool. If you're envious of something, that helps you understand what you want. And it's good to know what you want, because your desires come from somewhere within. And those core values are wholesome and beautiful, and you don't need to be afraid of them. So what you are envious of, what you envy in other people, is a great thing to be self-aware about. So those questions,
pause for a second. I'm sorry, I gotta pause for a second, because what I'm hearing here is Karina was saying, listen to your feelings and listen to your emotions and help children kind of look inward to kind of dig and pull out where their feelings are coming from so they can learn more about themselves and their kind of values that they have to help them figure out, I guess, and this is probably the next part coming, like where that the mission or the impact, where to go with that. But that's
beautiful. So you've just tied this all together, because I started on the other direction. I said, this is so hard for adults to do for these reasons. And then I said, but it's a little easier for teens. And what you just pointed out is that children at a young age, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, even if they're verbally, if they're, you know, able to communicate a little better, even younger at 4 sometimes, but they're not afraid of what they're feeling. They just don't know what they're feeling. Mm. And so if you can explore that with them and give them language and a space to explore that, the hardest part is done. Identifying and giving language is the easy part, right? Once you've hidden that because you're afraid of those feelings, or because you've had negative experiences with an adult that you know, your hero in life, you know, there were these negative experiences around those emotions, then you start to need to protect yourself from having those emotions. And later on, the older you get, the harder it is to figure out what you've buried down there. Right. And so you're absolutely right. Giving them language and just helping them understand what they're feeling by asking them, not by, you know, unless you're very confident that you know what they're feeling, you don't tell them. Most of the time you're just asking them, right? How does that make you feel? Okay, well, that's interesting. And leave it at that, right? Let them just be interested and curious and know that you're interested in that as well. Because as they get more and more language to describe what they're feeling, they'll already kind of be better connected to those emotions. And when they become a teenager, you ask them, okay, when you die, imagine you go to your funeral, what do you hope people say at your funeral? What impact, what legacy did you leave? What do people talk about when they talk about your life? I hope it wasn't that you got into such and such college and you majored in something really difficult that showed that you were really smart. It's probably something else, right?
So
when you die, what do people talk about? What legacy did you live because you brought the best of who you are to the world? And when they get that question, you know, teenagers that have kind of hidden their true, you know, emotions and thoughts and everything's buried so deep, oh, they have such a hard time pulling that out. And if as a kid, they didn't bury those things and they grew up in a more healthy environment, you know, you ask it and they're like, oh yeah, I can go right there. Yeah I want this and this and this. This is what I hope people think about me. Oh, what makes me, right? We're not taking care of our planet or social inequities or, you know, whatever, right? They'll have the language and they'll have access to that part of them that's the source of success, is that your core values. When you're clear about who you are and what you value, you can align your life with courageous about those core values. And that's where you begin to change your community, you change the world, and you can do it in your own way. Introverts, extroverts, it doesn't matter. You change in a way that aligns with who you are because you know who you are. And that's how people live really fulfilled and really successful lives.
So helping to learning about your emotions and being able to look inward and discover who you are so that you can better define your core values, so that you kind of know what you want to do, the kind of impact, what lights you up, and like where your feelings are coming from, like what juices you up to get you up in the morning or to drive you in that direction. And so then you go do it, and you go do it with all of your being and who you are. And that is what is world changing. And that is really powerful. And so let's bring back, I love that conversation and kind of like the big picture, but let's bring it kind of back to how do I, so where does that connect to me actually getting to Harvard or Yale or whatever college of my choice?
Yeah. So that's kind of phase one, right? And then if you can help the child develop that one skill, investigative journalism, ask better questions and recognize better answers, right? When you see them, when you find them, then you're going to dive into that thing that you're interested in. And here's the difference. If you follow that advice that we got at the very beginning of this call, right? That's take the most rigorous classes, get good test scores, demonstrate leadership, and you know, Uncle Joe's cousin's daughter got into Yale and she did those things. So you do these same things and you can get into Yale first, or you can get into Yale also. And of course, we already know that that's ridiculous. Yale doesn't want 2,000 clones of Uncle Joe's cousin's daughter. So they don't want another clone of her. Don't do what she did. But the part that we're leaving out that's so important is that Uncle Joe's cousin's daughter courageously aligned her life choices around her core values. And that's why she did those things. And so she had staying power. She really did wake up thinking, I need to learn more about this. I'm excited to do that. She woke up excited and she went to bed excited for the next day versus someone else who tries to copy what they did. They're going to go to bed exhausted because they're trying to keep up and they're going to start to have self-doubt. Man, I'm just not as good as Uncle Joe's cousin's daughter. She's better than me because she's able to keep this up and I can't. Right. And so there's no chance you'll be able to maintain pace with someone who is making choices that are aligned with their core values, because they're going to be internally motivated, intrinsically motivated. They're going to have way more energy. They're going to make different choices than you because their choices are intuitive because they align with who they are. You have to wait till they make choices so you know what choice to make, right? And that's, there's no chance that you're going to stand out the way that they stand out trying to copy them. Instead, go through phase one, arrive at that self-discovery, that self-awareness, and then whatever you're interested in, whatever it is, just investigate with gusto, right? Don't be afraid of any questions. And the stuff that breaks your heart and makes you angry, investigate it, right? At first, you're going to have some pretty naive ideas about how that should be solved, okay? You're going to be pretty naive about it. You're going to be thinking, you know, why doesn't the government just do this? Or why doesn't the school just change this or that? And you're naive about it. But when you explore with this kind of investigative journalistic integrity, and you really ask these questions, you're going to find for them. Or there's no way to do that because of these issues that stand in the way. And it's more complicated than I thought. It's not that, you know, everyone's just lazy and no one can see the problem except for me. It's that there's these conflicting interests and then the power struggle over here. And then the history of how this all came about and the layers upon layers of context that are difficult to undo in order to get to that solution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And you're no longer so naive about the problem and its potential solutions. But you also have identified some thought leaders in the field, some key decision makers, some movers and shakers. You know the professors that are doing research in this area and what their major findings have been and what the implications of those findings are, because now you're exploring in an intelligent way, right? And you know the solutions that have been proposed and why they worked or why they didn't work. And you can start to piece things together and say, adopt that solution that was done somewhere else, and if I could apply it to the problem in my community. And so you move into your impact project. And so I'll give you a quick example. I had a student who I actually interviewed on my podcast, a 14-year-old girl. Okay, so definitely too young to be proposing legislative change in her to the government for most people. But she was trying to stand out before she did the Ivy League Challenge. She was trying to stand out by winning science and math Olympiad competitions, which is a lot of work. Okay, it takes a ton of time. very impressive to me, but to a Yale or a Harvard or a Princeton, they're a dime a dozen, right? Very difficult to stand out by winning competitions that everyone else who wants to go to Yale and Harvard and Princeton is also trying to compete win, right? So if you win the whole thing, you're like a world champion, great. Otherwise, very difficult. So very difficult strategy, but that was her strategy. Fortunately, she agreed that she could just drop everything that wasn't aligned with her core values, and she wanted to figure out what to do instead. She dropped everything, dropped the science and math Olympiads, even though she was regionally competitive, which is really impressive at her age. She considered making her impact project teaching younger students how to win science and math Olympiads, but decided it wasn't really the impact she wanted in the world. And she knew she had, you know, core values around environmental sustainability, and she loved science. So she started investigating. And it took her a lot less time than I expected. Usually I would expect, you know, a couple months to really start getting into it. But within 3 weeks, she landed on food waste. And she realized how big of an impact food waste has on environmental sustainability, and how ridiculous it is that we have a problem with food waste. Why? It's all cultural. It's totally unnecessary. And we're wasting so much food for no reason. And so she just explored deeper and deeper and deeper. And she discovered that some legislation had been implemented or been proposed in the UK that effectively reduced food waste when it was adopted, effectively reduced food waste by a substantial amount, like 28% or something crazy like that. And the impact that reducing food waste in that area had on the environment was massive. And so she says, well, who's doing this? Who proposed that legislation? Who are the scientists? Who are the professors? Who are the professionals? And she figured out who was behind all of that. And as a 14-year-old girl, she starts reaching out to professors and professionals and organizations. And of course, these people are not, you know, proposing they really care about removing food waste or reducing food waste. They really care about the environment. So when someone in a new community reaches out to them and says, I love what you did in the UK. Here's the situation in my community. I'm concerned about this and this. And you have an intelligent, you know, email that says, this is what you did. This is what I want to adopt. These are my questions. Can you help? I mean, these are people who care a lot about removing food waste.
Yeah.
And so they get someone who wants to join their cause and they say, yeah, let me help you. Let me give you everything I've got. And so when this now 15-year-old, she's now 15, when this now 15-year-old, she hasn't submitted it yet, but when she submits a proposal to her government, her name will be at the top, but some names with initials like PhD and et cetera are going to be following her, as well as reputable organizations. Those names will also appear on this proposal. So I ask you to put yourself in the shoes of an admissions officer at Yale, at Harvard, at Princeton, at whatever school you're trying to decide who to admit into your campus. Which of the students of the 40 or 50,000 applications you are going to go through this admission cycle, which of them is most likely to leave your campus and change the world? Because that's what you want. You want people who come to your campus and grow and then leave your campus and change the world.
Yeah. It sounds like she's already doing it. So I'm going to go with her.
That's right. If that's what you're looking for, then you're going to compare, oh, I have 100 people who did outstandingly well in science and math Olympiad competitions. And I've got this person who, for some reason in grade 9, quit. She was doing really well, and then she just quit all those competitions, but oh my goodness, look what she did, right? Who are you going to, who's more impressive? The person who literally changed legislation and reduced food waste in her community, which improved, you know, the outlook for global sustainability by a quantifiable amount, that's a really impressive teenager.
And like, even if like, so I agree, like I am picking her. If I'm the college admission person, I'm going to pick her 100%. But even if she doesn't get into the college of her choice, or maybe for some reason she chose not to go to college, or take a different path and study and do an internship with someone else and learn from the thought leaders of the world, like, isn't that not a worthy path too? And isn't, like, she's already changing the world, right? Already at she goes to college and she continues on this, and she learns now when she goes to college, she's also more clear on what her major is too, right? There's also the thing of like struggling to, you know, go to college and you're spending all that money going into debt, not even knowing what you want to do, still trying to figure things out. Like that, it's the classic college experience, right?
Oh yeah. Yep. That's absolutely right. And you've gone straight to the end result, the best part of all of this. If it wasn't for college, right? Yes, it's clear that this is your best strategy to get into college. Arrive at high level of self-awareness and then leverage that self-awareness to begin solving a problem and making an impact in your community around something that violates your core values. By far, that's the best way to stand out when you apply to college. And that's not just true of the top schools. It's also going to help you get scholarships at schools that are not as highly ranked. It's going to help you stand out in all of these universities. But like you said, the real reason we do this is for the human. It's for her success, right? The truth is, if she does not go to college, then it will probably be because she thinks, you know what? I know I'm going to be successful whatever I do. I already have a track record of being successful. I know who I am, and I know how to solve problems. I know how to identify what the issues are and then work to network with people and collaborate with people and lead a team to solve problems. Maybe I'll skip college and start Microsoft or whatever, right? And these stories of uber successful people, the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, all these people that dropped out of college, they didn't drop out because they were bored in class. They dropped out because they had something more important to do, right? And if you don't go to college, what's the best use of your time as a teenager? Is it trying to follow directions and work really hard to get the best grades possible, and then do well on your tests and join a lot of clubs? Is it to have the mindset that says, you know, when you're in junior high, you need to work really, really hard because high school is coming. And then you get to high school and everyone says, you need to work really, really hard because college is coming. Yeah. And then college arrives and everyone says, you need to work really, really hard because the real world is coming. Your first job is coming. Yeah. And your first job, everyone says, work really, really hard so you can get a promotion. Work really, really hard so you can start managing a team. And the whole time, like for decades of your life, you're working really, really hard because life is about to begin. And you never realize that life has already begun.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. As soon as you identify your core values, you know who you are on this planet. And that's when life begins. That's when life begins to be really meaningful. So if I was to, you know, work with any teenager, if I was a parent of a teenager, my number one priority is going to be, how do I provide the environment that allows my teenager to arrive at that level of self-awareness, to figure out their core values, right? And then how do I encourage my teenager to courageously align his or her life with their core values? Because once that happens, it doesn't matter what college they go to. They'll excel at whatever college they go to, and whichever college they go to will be lucky to have them. And that's true if that college is Harvard. That's true if that college is your local community college right down the street. Either campus would be lucky to have a self-aware, problem-solving, you know, superstar who has used their teenage years to develop these skills and develop this self-awareness. And if they don't go to college, the business that they create is going to solve real problems in the real world, and the community that they operate in will be lucky to have them. And so, yeah, you're right. It's about getting into college only because college admissions is the thing that teenagers get excited about. And so they're willing to do the hard work of introspection and self-awareness so that they can get into a good college. It just so happens that that's just the, you know, that's the kind of, that's the trick, right? We need to pick something that you're interested enough about that you'll do that work to get. But it's the work that does, you know, that improves your life, that changes your life. It's not the getting into that college.
Right. It's about the process, not the destination, right? The process. Honestly, we could end the podcast right here and bam, mindset shift like this. But I want to get a little personal with it. And I want to ask you some of the questions that you were saying to ask children and just asking you. It sounds like you've found your passion project now, but I want you to think back to younger Steve Gardner and did you go through this process? I want to ask you, like, what broke your heart? Like, what was that thing? And if you can, like, take us potentially to what that initial thought process was to kind of get you to, you know, maybe where you were, where you are now and what you're doing now, you know, what broke your heart and what about that broke your heart? Who did you admire, like, that was doing something similar in the space? Like, you know, when you died, like, what did you want people to say about you? Like, try to answer if you could and just maybe be a little bit of an example for us.
Yeah. Well, I really wish I had a Chaz Lewis or an Ivy League Challenge program available to me younger, because I stumbled through this. I didn't have a mentor guide me through it. I didn't have, you know, a program that could really target these issues and really help me arrive there quickly. But over time, as with most people, I uncovered biases and mindsets and beliefs that I had about myself and about the world that were not true. Some of those experiences that really shook my world was meeting highly successful people. I met a couple of really rich people who were the kindest, most generous, most amazing, loving, friendly, helpful people. And I had grown up thinking that, man, rich people, they get there by stepping on other people's necks and backstabbing people. And that's how they get to the top. And I had to meet someone and spend time with someone that led to another person who was even richer than the first one. And these two people blew me away because they were so kind and so, you know, focused on serving people, and they cared so much about humanity and about, you know, things that I did not think that evil rich people cared about, right? All the messages that I grew up hearing were quite the opposite. And so that shook me to my core. I was like, what? And that kind of started me on this journey of challenging my beliefs, understanding how much, you know, our perspective and our beliefs about the world shape the world itself, right? And this idea, like Wayne Dyer said, that when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Mm. It's not that it's just a change in the tint or the color. The actual thing changes because you've been interpreting that thing through your beliefs. And we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we believe it to be. I couldn't grasp that until some things radically, you know, just crushed my old belief systems. And I couldn't deny that my old belief was wrong anymore. And so that got me on the process of just challenging my beliefs and being open to that. And that led to personal development. And I got a coach. I couldn't afford one, but I really wanted to. And I got a coach, and kind of that really helped me through a lot of these beliefs. And then I became a personal development coach. And I worked with adults. I worked with a lot of adults on their core values and helping uncover these things. But I knew that, you know, I don't know, something about the way that I'm driven. I love the classroom and I love youth and the energy of youth, right? Of teenagers. And so college students are fine. High school students are fine. But adults, different energy, doesn't quite resonate with me the same way. It still brought me to life and I still soared. I loved coaching, loved it. And I still do it sometimes with adults, but it's not what I want to be doing, spending my time with. But I do sometimes because parents sometimes need some help. And anyway, neither here nor there. I wanted to get back into education, and I had to go through a bit of a rocky path to get there because I thought that being a school teacher wasn't like a, I don't know, like a big boy job. It was too fun. And plus, I wanted to make more money than that. And so teaching, I didn't think was a real career for me, even though I loved it so much when I was in college and I, you know, go abroad and teach English or something. It's so much fun. But I didn't think that it could really be my career. And so I got into business and I managed a business. I was a CEO at a time of a very, you know, $500 million project, actually. Massive responsibilities and massive opportunity cost as well. A huge cost to that because my son was born and I never saw him. And long story short, 9 months in, he's about 9 months old. And I was able to get out of a meeting early and come home before he was in bed because I was working 7 days and I'd get home after he was asleep at night. I'd leave before he woke up. And that was rough on my wife, harder than I realized. She wasn't vocal about how difficult it was, but I realized how hard it was on my son when I came home. He's 9 months old and I'm so excited to give him a hug. And he's scared of me and he cries and he doesn't know who I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that the cost is too great. Right. So my wife, who's a teacher, we decide let's teach. I'll go get my teaching certificate. We'll drop out, you know, we'll be poor if we need to be poor, but let's do things that are aligned with who we are and that allow us to raise a family. And so we got into teaching. We actually went into international teaching and we live in Singapore now where she still teaches and I do the Ivy League Challenge full time. But when I first started teaching teenagers, after having been a personal development coach, I tried to figure out, you know, I tried to help my teenagers understand these things and, you know, advice that I would give to adults who paid really well for that advice. The teenagers were like, yeah, who cares? Like, let's move on to stuff that's important. They could care less about what I wanted to share with them. And so that is where the Ivy League Challenge was born. And what I did is I called some classmates from Harvard and I said, would you be willing to just come out? I was in China at the time. Would you be willing to come out to China? Let's spend a week with the teenagers that are in my school. And you guys tell them as Harvard graduates, not as their, but as guests from the graduated from Harvard, you guys care about personal development just as much as I do. I know you personally, right? Come on out. The school will pay for you to come out. And we'll do this camp. And we did, and it blew me away. The same kids that could care less what I told them about, you know, getting enough sleep and how to incorporate good breathing and good self-talk and good messaging and your subconscious and all of these things, your belief work, all of that. They just ignored me as their teacher, when they ignore their parents, of course, because their parents know even less than their teachers to a teenager, right?
Yeah.
And then you bring in a couple of Harvard students or Harvard graduates, and they're sitting on the edge of their seats, taking notes, asking questions. You know, it was amazing to me. It was absolutely amazing. And so I realized that changing the vehicle that delivers this message changes everything for a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I've never looked back, right? I've been very, very clear that this is the most meaningful work that I can possibly do. So the stuff that breaks my heart, among other things, is the level of disengagement in middle school and high school. The most recent Gallup polls show that there's an eighth grade cliff that people fall off of. There's the fifth grade slide and then the eighth grade cliff. In fifth grade, students start to question if they need to spend all their time trying to impress their teacher. And in eighth grade, they abandon it completely and just fall off a cliff. And the level of disengagement from grade 8 to grade 12 is, you know, about 85% of teenagers are somewhere on the disengagement scale. Now, that doesn't mean that they're the 85% are like actively rebelling and actively sabotaging classes, like some actually are. And I know that from being a classroom teacher. Some students are disengaged enough that they actively try to sabotage the class. Or report being fully engaged in the class. So, you know, that leaves a large percentage that's not, you know, sabotaging the class, but not like looking forward to class either. 85% somewhere on the disengagement scale, that is on the disengagement spectrum. That's unacceptable. That's totally unacceptable. If we're going to require teenagers to be in a classroom, sitting at a desk, they're, you know, for most of the day, and they are somewhere between agnostic and actively, you know, sabotaging the classroom because they hate it, that's not okay. That's not right. And so I recognize it's very, very difficult for a teacher who has never done the self-reflective work to figure out what their core values are, to be expected to help teenagers figure out what their core values are. I get that. There's a lot of issues here, but it's not right. It's not okay that our system currently disengages 85% of its clients, right? And so a lot of really hardworking teachers are working very hard to overcome this. And some teachers do a better job than others. And some communities and some families do a much better job than others. But the bottom line is we still have a serious issue and the cost is mind-bogglingly large, right? The cost of having a disengaged youth is immeasurable.
Yeah.
The contrast between when I see a student come into the program who doesn't know their core values and doesn't know how to align their life with their core values, and the difference after 3 months of working with them, and how much more productive they are in society, how much more, you know, fulfilled and happy and confident they can be with that lifestyle compared to the traditional lifestyle. I mean, I can see how big of a difference this would make for humanity. Just absolutely changes everything.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're not capitalizing on that in a more effective way breaks my heart. It really does. And so I wake up trying to think of how I can access, how I can reach more parents and more teens, and how I can encourage more people to, if you can't do the Ivy League challenge, that's fine. Can you help your teen, or if you're a teen, can you work with other teens or with parents or with adults that you trust to ask these questions and just be introspective and be curious about yourself and get to that level, whatever it is, if you take years like I did, or you take weeks like some students are able to do, whatever the price is, pay the price to figure out who you are and what drives you on this planet. Because engaging in life is where you're going to be more confident. It's where you're going to learn metacognition and all the, you know, prefrontal cortex based skills that are so valuable in this society that is changing faster than we can realize. That's what's going to set you up not only for success, but more importantly, for happiness, confidence, you know, a meaningful life. And that's what brings me to life.
Well, wow, great. Thank you so much, Steve Gardner. Any very last words you want to say before we end the podcast?
Well, I love what you're doing in helping parents help younger kids as they look forward to their teenage years. The better parents connect and make kids feel like they have a sense of belonging in the home, that they're safe, that they can explore their emotions, they can explore all of that, the easier it's going to be to transition into teenage years. And once they're there, I do hope that they look into whether it's my program or I'm not aware of another program that does what I do, but by the time those kids get there, there could be other programs that are there. But my podcast is free. And it can be very helpful for those who have teenagers. The Ivy League Prep Academy podcast. I do a weekly episode. They're short and they target teenagers. So I speak directly to the teen even though I know more than half my listeners are parents and teachers and college counselors, you can listen in as a parent and hopefully you gain some value. I do hear from a lot of parents about how it is helpful for them as well, but I speak to the teens and use that resource, right? I have a lot of family, because you drive them to school or you drive them to practice or you drive them to whatever, they listen to my podcast. And then at dinner time, they talk about what they heard, right? So on the way to school and on the way back, we listen to this. It's all about, you know, I have a podcast, for example, called The Hero on a Mission. And this is an example because I just got an email about it. But the parents, so they listen to the Hero on a Mission podcast. And then over dinner, they can talk about, well, if you were directing your own movie and you're the hero in your movie, when does your movie get started, right? Asking the kid exactly the questions that I asked in the podcast, and the kid already heard it. So they've been thinking about it all day and just life-changing discussions that you can have. So there are resources that are free. There are obviously resources that I would love to have your children in my course as well, the Ivy League Challenge, but there are a lot of free resources and I truly try to give as much as I can in that podcast for free. Obviously it's impossible to duplicate peer-to-peer interaction and things like that, that can only happen in the course, but take advantage of resources that are there and take advantage of what you're learning from you, Ches Lewis, as you teach them, you know, the stuff that they do as early kids, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, man, that stuff is so important. And it leads to just a beautiful transition into teenage years and into adulthood. So just keep doing the best you can and have some self-love and self-acceptance for yourself as well. You're gonna make mistakes as a parent because you were not raised the way that you're trying to raise your kids. You've got a lot of triggers and you've got a lot of stuff. So you're gonna make a lot of mistakes, but trust that your kids are eventually gonna figure out how hard you worked to give them a better life than they otherwise would have had if you didn't work so hard.
What's my name? What's my name? What's